You know, a friend of mine came up to me the other day and she said,
I understand what you're saying, Mr. Speaker, but what can I do about it? I can't do anything.
Well, if you believe that, folks, we've already lost. But the truth is, this is a democracy. Every voice counts. Just when I thought my voice didn't count, it showed up on the AP Network News. So don't ever think your voice doesn't count. I'd like to give you a few suggestions of what you might do. And the bottom line is this. You've got to speak out. Speak out.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
I'm here. Let's get all the buttons pushed the way they're supposed to be. I'm here, all right. I hope... Hope you're all having a good day. I am not. Let me tell you that right off the bat. I am having one hell of a lousy day. I am in a terrible mood, and I can't hide it. So if I seem a bit out of sorts, and what is that exactly, out of sorts? What is it, in sorts or out of sorts? It's like on the wagon or off the wagon. I don't know. Anyway, I'm out of sorts today, whatever the hell that means. What it means to me is that I'm in a lousy mood. Had a couple of great interviews planned today that canceled out at the very last minute, and I find out the real reason, and it's always the real reason is they call you and tell you that they've got plans other this or that or the other. You always find out that they've gotten a better deal somewhere. Not that we pay people for interviews, of course, but they like to go where they can get more listeners, and of course they can get more listeners on CNN and actually get FaceTime on there, or MSNBC, than they can on this program, so they'll call you at the last minute and say sorry, and then you find out that's where they went. So, if I were a really nasty guy, I would name names. Maybe I will anyway. I'm in that kind of a mood today anyway. Tried to get them replaced real quick. Couldn't do it. So you are going to be the guest today. You got that? Call us 866-546-5254. I would love to have you as a guest on the program today. 866-546-5254. This is probably going to be a terrible show. I'll tell you that right up off the bat because I am in a rotten mood. And I don't know what's going to get me out of it. I really don't. If I were a drinking man, I'd be sloshing it down right now. But I'm not, so I won't. So I'll sit here and just have a miserable day, and maybe you'll join me and have a miserable day, too. I'm not one of those people that usually has a miserable day, but I don't know. Today's just one of those days when everything's going wrong. You ever have one of those? Then I look at, let me tell you. We had a problem with our phones yesterday. And as you all know, we had a problem with our cable, our high-speed cable with which we stream this program. We had a problem with that last week and found it had been sabotaged, not just here, but on down the road from the TIB Broadcasting Building by someone who obviously knew very well what they were doing. And now we find that we've had someone tampering with our phone system as well. And I'm not happy about it. I've had an expert here looking at it, trying to understand, trying to figure out what it is they're doing. Whatever it is, it's so high tech that maybe so low tech. I don't know. I'm not the kind of guy that can figure that sort of thing out. somebody is, but the people we've had here today trying to figure it out cannot. We've tested the phones. They're working fine today. Called them from several different numbers. Had people from around the country call them from several different numbers. Everything appears to be fine. But let me tell you this. If you call this, try and call this program today and you cannot get through, if you get some sort of an error message or something on this fancy, smanshy phone system we have, then let me tell you, there's somebody involved in the phone system that hadn't ought to be. Let me just put it that way. Getting a little uncomfortable with some of this, I must say. Probably shouldn't talk about it, but I am getting just a bit uncomfortable with some of it. And it makes you wonder, and as you know, all of you that have listened to the program, we've been on, what, some 3.5 years now or so, you know I'm no conspiracy theorist guy. In fact, I shun that sort of thing usually. I regularly get emails from a couple of people, organizations that think that 9/11 was planned by our government and all this and that. And I don't want anything to do with that. I mean, I've looked at it, I researched it, and I don't have any faith in it. And I guess the main thing is I don't want to believe it. So anyway, that's how it is. I'm just not one of those kind of guys. I got to have proof stuck in front of my face before I believe anything. Hey, let's just check out the phones. We got somebody on the phone right now, I think. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, it's working today.
Well, yes, seems to be.
Okay, well, because if you could, it would work before your show came on, and it would work after your show, but if when people called in, your machine would answer and say, I'll be with you as soon as I can. And then you hold for the next 20 minutes, and you saw no indication that anybody would be on the phone.
No, so. And it's right in front of my face, so
right.
I couldn't miss it. It's maybe 18 inches from my face, right in my direct line of sight. There's no way to and this. Let me just say this system that I probably shouldn't say what kind of a system it is, but I think I have before. It is a highly sophisticated phone system. Extremely expensive, and it's been tested out every way you can test a phone system out, and it tests out just fine. So something's going on that no one that I know can figure out, so I don't know.
Well, I am a conspiracy theorist because I have to live with it all the time. I've got a half dozen of these guys assigned to me 24/7, so they're different. They do different tricks. They have different personalities and different skill levels. One of them is an extremely angry person who likes to make threats. But I think it would be no big task for them to examine the schematics of whatever high-tech telephone system you've got and go to where the mechanism is that activates the light showing that somebody's called and simply shut them off for the time that the show is on. As soon as you go off the air, they turn them back on.
Well, I hope that's not possible. But, Dave, I must tell you, and I'll tell everybody, I'm not sure if I mentioned it last week or not. One day last week, and I have it saved. I should look it up, and I probably should go ahead and read it now when I get time here to look it up today. I got a extremely threatening email this past week. I mean big time threatening. And it mentioned that they would do high-tech damage to us and so forth, and I just passed it off as well. Oh, well, you know, big talk. And then this happens, and I wonder what, you know. But then again, I also think that if someone were going to mess with you, they wouldn't bother to send you an email first and tip you off. So I don't know if the two are associated or not. I hope not.
Well, for some strange reason, I will tell you that a couple of them, one in particular, likes to make you aware of his presence. We'll type it right out on any blog, let you know that he's there, and be nervous. They like to see, can they intimidate you? This one does, and if he can get you to back off through his threats. And so.
Do you ever get any mail or indication from anybody, and I'll put the name out there, I don't care, from anybody named Paulson?
No, they changed the name.
Okay. I've gotten a couple of years ago, a couple of really nasty emails from this person and phone calls as well, and now an email. I can't trace them. I have no way of doing that, but I've turned them over to the authorities in the past, and they've looked at them and given me that old what the hell, you know, attitude. So I don't know.
Well, for a couple of years, I was on Mark Levine's Radio Inside Scoop, and my hackers jumped on there with me, and they were all coming through with their very fundamentalist, very gay-hating, very angry, stem cell-loving people. Mm-hmm. And at least one of them, you see, oh, now, Mark knows a way, and there is a way. You have to be pretty high-tech, and I guess he is, where you can trace the machine that's actually sending these to you.
Yes, you can. You can buy a program for it. It's expensive, and I just was told about it the other day. I guess you and I are letting on how ignorant I am about some of these things. You can buy a program that can trace it right back to an address.
Well, Mark Levine has such a thing, and so he traced back some of these goons that he was getting that were there to disrupt his blog, and one of them, almost all of them, use a Hotmail address or a Yahoo address or something, but one of them sent his messages in from his FBI ISP.
Mm. Wow.
That was the real hothead, the one that likes to tell you the horrible death you're going to die at his hands and such.
Jeez. Oh, well. Well, we hope we won't have any problem with it today, and we hope we can get this thing all straightened out anyway to everybody's satisfaction. Hey, Dave, thanks for calling.
Yeah, at least we can be aware, huh?
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
Thank you. Ah, yeah, strange things happen. Strange things happen. Hey, speaking of strange things, how many of you had a chance to read the, actually read the letter, but heard about the... I think it was an 18-page letter that Ahmadinejad from Iran sent to Mr. Bush. First time in, I think, 27 years. Several news sources have reported that Iranian President Ahmadinejad, I always have trouble with that name, that he's written an important letter to Junior Bush stating what he called new solutions for getting out of international problems in the current fragile situation in the world. And I don't know about you, but this development seems like, to me, it just seems like a bolt of lightning. It came completely out of the blue, and obviously, very obviously, our government's got no idea what to do about it. There's been no official contact between Iran and the USA for, as I said, around 27 years. And to me, it's literally astonishing that Ahmadinejad has taken this very bold, politically savvy step. And that's exactly what it is. We might not like the guy or trust him any farther than we can throw him. But let's face it, this was quite a move on his part, at least on the surface. It appears that he wants to find some sort of a peaceful resolution to this current crisis that's been built into a major fire because Washington's been fanning the flames like crazy. Junior Bush's administration's been in high gear, promoting fear and panic among the press and the citizens of this country, and warning anybody who would listen that Iran is ready to turn Washington, D.C. into radioactive powder with their vast arsenal of atomic weapons. Only problem is, and you all know this, been there, done that. Remember Iraq, anyone? Same story, same cast of characters with a different villain written into the script this time. Instead of Saddam Hussein, it's Ahmadinejad from Iran. And so now, you can call him crazy, you can call him a lunatic, that's what our government always does, anybody they don't care for, they've done the same thing with Kim Jong-il. He's served the ball over into Bush's court. Now, if Bush were smart, well, back up a minute. Forget I said that. If someone in the Bush administration were smart, they might just take this move as a positive step in the right direction that could lead to some sort of a peaceful resolution to this problem. If you remember, yesterday I mentioned that I didn't think Bush would go to war with Iran because he would like to bully his way through this. and win this war of words without firing a shot and come out smelling like a rose and be able to brag to the rest of the world that, he's won the peace in the Middle East. That's what he's after, because he's mired in the mud now over there. He's got a legacy that sucks and will remain that way forever. And he's trying to find some way to revive his legacy, to at least bring it up to some sort of a decent level, and he thinks this will do it. Well, now, this letter should give him the chance to do just that. Only thing is that Bush doesn't want to settle this in an amicable way. He wants to do it on his terms and his terms only. And the way he sees it, screw whatever Iran wants out of the deal, but if the Bush administration were smart, and again, I know I'm expecting the impossible, but if they were smart, they would see this as an amazing turn of events not to be ignored, especially after the past weekend where both sides were slinging insults each other at an alarming rate. You heard them. But what we have to look at here is that this gesture by Ahmadinejad makes him look like the bigger man. It does. It makes him look like the guy that's wanting to settle this thing to the satisfaction of both sides. And Bush, being Bush, won't allow that. Anything that's of a positive nature in this dispute is going to have to look like it was Bush's idea. After all, he can't be upstaged by a guy half the world thinks is a madman. Of course, the other half the world thinks Bush is a madman. But he may, you know, Ahmadinejad may be just that. He might be a madman. I don't know. But he has upstaged Bush with this letter. And he's done so, if you stop and think about it, at considerable risk to his own political capital in Tehran. He's skating on thin ice over there. He doesn't run the country. He's a figurehead. And the mullahs can dump his ass anytime they want to, and he knows that. And the reformists over there, they would like to throw him out. So he's really gambling a lot of his own political capital right now. And if the Iranians are to be believed, can anyone tell me what would be wrong with helping Iran, helping them along with the development of peaceful nuclear energy sources, which could be monitored by half the world? What would be wrong with that? Do you not think that would be the solution to this whole mess? If Iran is to be taken at its word that the reason they want nuclear energy was for an energy source that would, then would it be such a terrible thing to see to it that they do so and then monitor the situation somehow through the UN? That's doable. That's very doable. Wouldn't that be so terrible? Would the Israelis have a problem with Iran having a nuclear power plant or two? Would they? You know, doesn't anyone in the U.S. administration realize that for the sake of peace in the entire Middle East, Israel is going to have to give up some of their hardline stances concerning nuclear power for these other poor countries who are not getting billions of dollars of aid from Uncle Sam as they are? Isn't there anybody that's willing to discuss that? Wouldn't working out a peaceful method of helping Iran achieve their goal of nuclear power be a terrific show of goodwill, not just to Iran, but to the entire Muslim world? Wouldn't a gesture like that prove to the Muslim world that the U.S. is interested in peace in that region instead of imperialism? Wouldn't it be better than starving them to death like we did with the sanctions against Iraq? You know, Ahmadinejad's letter gave Bush an opportunity to defuse this entire situation peacefully. Literally threw it right in his lap. He gave him the excuse he needs to deal with this guy who has alienated half the world with his outrageous statements. Well, don't forget, Bush has made some outrageous statements as well. But am I wrong here? Doesn't this give Bush the chance to show the world, and more importantly, show all of the Americans that maybe, just maybe, the Bush administration can back down from its policy of no matter what happens, we'll settle it with military force? Does that always have to be the answer? it has been so far in this administration. Is it possible for him to break away from the PNAC zealots who have guided our foreign policy since he's been in office? Is this unreasonable? Am I looking at this through rose-colored glasses of some kind? You know, and two, Ahmadinejad has put his cards on the table, and he's asked Bush to put up or shut up. Put up in the form of some sort of workable diplomacy to defuse the situation, or shut up and prove to the world one more time that he is, in fact, only interested in military solutions to any foreign policy problem. So now the question becomes whether or not Bush has the leadership abilities to analyze the situation and see that this just might be a win-win situation for everyone concerned. Think about that. Bush can brag about a diplomatic victory. Ahmadinejad can save his political skin and have nuclear power for his people, and the U.S. might, once again, command respect from the international community as not being a bunch of warmongers. But there's always a caveat to this. So far, the results of this whole thing are not encouraging. Our fantastic Secretary of State, the goddess Condoleezza Rice, who's been put up on a pedestal by the Bush administration, she totally blew off the letter saying it didn't address the problem at hand. Just blew it off. And Bush's NSA boy, Stephen Hadley, said he didn't even know of any letter. And he went on to restate the administration's seemingly immovable stance on the whole problem. You know, Hadley, I hate to hear him talk. Let me quote what he said on NBC's Today Show. The international community has been very clear to Iran what it needs to do. It needs to return to the suspension of its nuclear activities in order to open the door for a diplomatic resolution. He's telling Iran, we're having it our way. We're having it 100% our way. We will not talk to you. We will not discuss the matter. We will not find a peaceable solution to this. You're going to do it our way or else. You know, I can't say I'm surprised by Hadley's remarks. I've not been given any reason to believe that anyone in this administration has suddenly come to their senses regarding international issues. And let me assure you that no matter how deranged Ahmadinejad looks to the American people and the Israelis, to the rest of the world, Bush and his people appear far more dangerous than Iran does. And let me explain that. You see, Iran hasn't started any wars for quite a while, while we know that another certain government has. And Iran doesn't have the military capability to wreak havoc upon the rest of the world, and the United States does. And Bush, and I know a lot of you don't like to face this, but Bush is looked upon as being every bit the madman to the rest of the world, as does Ahmadinejad does to the American people. Bush is the most feared man in the world. That's right. If Bush doesn't take the opportunity to effect some sort of diplomatic progress from this letter, we will know for a fact that Bush and his people are indeed madmen of the highest order. Now, I don't know what Iran's leader's true motives are. I don't know. I have to assume that he doesn't want his country to end up looking like Iraq does right now. But whatever his reason for sending this letter, it is, no matter how you look at it, a positive step in the right direction. It's just too damn bad that the leaders of what is the most powerful nation on earth and what used to be looked upon as the most gracious country on the planet could not find it within themselves to make the first move toward a diplomatic solution to this very real problem. That is the sad part for all of us. That's the really sad part. We are the ones with the military might. We are the ones that can settle any problem we want to militarily. We're the ones holding the big stick. Wouldn't it behoove somebody with that kind of power to also have a similar diplomatic power? Wouldn't it behoove you to always go to the bargaining table knowing that in your hip pocket you've got the most powerful military in the world? Doesn't that always give you an advantage at the table, albeit an unfair advantage in many cases? Can't this government realize that? Think about this. This is not the former Soviet Union we're sparring back and forth with here. This is not Khrushchev banging his shoe on the table at the United Nations. This is not Khrushchev saying, "We will bury you." This is not the height of the Cold War when we had thousands of nukes pointed at one another with the former Soviet Union. We're talking about the country of Iran. A country that's not so far removed from being a third world country. Time-wise, not so far removed at all. A highly intelligent people. A country that can be a prosperous nation in time. A country that is leaning toward freedom. The reformists are going to have their way there sooner or later. The theocrats there cannot last forever. Any intelligent person knows that. They don't have a Saddam Hussein in power there that's killing people by the scores in order to save power. No. The reformists there are making progress. And they are an intelligent people, and they're an educated people. And the people of Iran don't have an axe to grind with the United States. But let me tell you something. If after finding out that their leader, their president, Ahmadinejad, sends an 18-page letter, first time in 27 years a leader of that country has tried to communicate with the president of the United States, and they just blow this off as nothing, they're insulted. They are insulted, no matter what they may think of their leader. And the reformists over there don't think a lot of this guy, obviously. But they're insulted that the government of the United States wouldn't give them the time of day. And why wouldn't they be insulted? This is not just a duel between Ahmadinejad and George Bush. This is 70 million people in the nation of Iran. 70 million living, breathing souls, just as we have, 290-some million living, breathing souls in this country. One life not better than another in either of these countries. So both nations, the people of both nations, have a great deal at stake. And yet, the leaders of both their countries act like a couple of asses. I don't know what the answer is. I wish I did. But I'm not going to act like a lot of people say Democrats always do. I will give you my answer to what I would do, and you know by now by listening to this little rant I've been talking about for the last 15 or 20 minutes. I would sit down and talk to these people. Absolutely. There's no reason not to. It would not make us look weak in the eyes of the world. It would not make George Bush look any weaker in the eyes of the American public. Most certainly not. And this is no Neville Chamberlain type deal either. Not at all. Because this country that we're dealing with does not have the power to take out the United States. We do have the power to take them out. Make no mistake about that. We do. Many times over. So with that in mind, there is no earthly reason not to sit down like reasonable people. Sit down across the table with a delegation from each one of these nations and sit and work this out. It can be done. It can be done. To say that it cannot be done is a failure on our part. Another dismal failure in the ledger of George W. Bush. To say that he didn't even try to negotiate with these people over this is but one more failure in the on the ledger of George W. Bush. Wouldn't you think, just wouldn't you think he might consider the fact that he could come out of this looking pretty good if he would sit down and meet with these people and hash out an agreement where they could get their nuclear power plants that they very well might need for energy for their people and keep them monitored closely over the years so that we know that they would not pose an atomic military threat toward their neighbors, toward Israel, toward the United States, or anybody else in the world. And as for these people who think, well, they would develop an atomic bomb, and maybe they wouldn't attack the United States with it. They would put it in the hands of terrorists who would do that. Tell me something. There are reasonable people in all these countries. Most definitely. Why would a leader of a country like Iran take a chance on giving a terrorist organization a bomb if traced back to them, would know that it would obliterate their country off the face of the earth? Why would they do that? The answer is they would not. Let's go to the phone. You're on the Guy James Show. Hello.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
We have a company down here. Is he still down here?
Oh, Mr. Bush. Oh, gee whiz. I'm so honored. Did you see where in Washington, D.C., that they found his travel itinerary in detail, laying on the street?
I did hear that, see that, or heard it or something.
A garbage man found it.
Had everything.
Everything.
Well, what about his visit to the senior citizen? And he told them that, you know, the deadline is Monday?
Yeah. And he's not going to...
Oh, they're good. You know, deadlines are good.
Yeah, well, and they're not going to extend that deadline either.
I know. The Democrats tried to get it extended, but...
We tried real hard to have a couple of people on from an organization, Physicians for National Healthcare, a fine organization in this country, and we couldn't get them on today. They didn't have time to come on the program today to talk about just this very thing, about how Monday is the deadline and how it should be extended and how so many people don't even understand this and what a flawed program it is anyway.
Well, I've had involvement with it, and for myself and for others. And I have a friend she's got so many things wrong. You know, she takes at least 23 medications, sometime more. And you get the explanation of benefits, and it's really difficult to understand. And it's every time you call, no matter who you call, you get a different answer from.
Oh, sure, it's another
the
huge
different places.
Another huge bureaucracy.
But there's I think it's a $3,600 what they call donut hole.
Yes.
And if you've reached, it's $2,220, I think, and when you reach that, then you have to. This has to be out of pocket for that donut hole. And I think a lot of people that are getting now, that are getting good results right now, they're going to be surprised in a month or two when they're not going to be able to get their stuff paid for.
Absolutely, certainly. And you know what, Juanita, the other thing that I cannot get anybody from the Bush administration, and I have tried, believe me, I've tried to get somebody from their side of this issue to come on this program, and I'll treat them with respect and dignity that they deserve, come on this program and explain to me and to all of us, how did it happen that we are put in a situation where the government is not allowed to negotiate prices
right.
of these drugs with these drug companies? How
right.
in the world could the U.S. government be put in that position?
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Yes, it is, and it's really driving. I read an article on the internet where the guy said is driving the families of the people crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, here we got the VA. The VA can negotiate prices to get the lowest prices for their organization, and yet this now, no, the government's prohibited from.
And it's just crazy. I don't know who came up with that amount for the donut hole. What in the world?
Well, as always, I'm afraid this thing has been put together to benefit you know who.
Yeah, right.
those that have against
really,
those that have
you
not.
You know, I think that a lot of people that think that this is a good thing, and when they reach that donut hole, I think a lot of people are going to be surprised.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed.
I just don't know what it's going to be. But I think a lot of them are going to hit it before the election time.
Well, it doesn't take a lot to get there anymore.
They might have thought they had it timed, but I don't think they realize what people have to pay out.
Sure.
I don't think they have any comprehension of it.
That's
you
right.
know. So,
yep.
Anyhow.
You're right.
But he was telling them, oh, this is a good thing, you know, we have to have a deadline, you know.
Oh, and I saw him speaking today, and of course he had the signs behind him, that wall treatment that they always put up behind him today, and today
yeah.
it was praising, I don't know who makes those. They must have a company that works nonstop wherever he goes to put those up.
You remember when he had all the boxes, you know,
oh,
made
yeah.
in China?
Yeah, made in China. That's right. That happened up in Ohio someplace. I can't
that
remember exactly where,
back.
But yeah, yeah. That's
oh,
right.
Oh, dear. It's just like a comedy of errors, but it's
you have taken the words out of my mouth. This is like yeah. watching a Marx Brothers movie, a Three Stooges, and a Laurel and Hardy all wrapped into one.
Although the laughs on us,
yeah, yeah,
you know, it is really just gets weirder and weirder and weirder.
Oh, and how weird is it that I mean, I found this really weird. I mean, Denny Hastert. The Speaker of the House has been a real team player for Bush all along. He hasn't said boo to anything Bush has done. And now he's kicking on Goss being kicked out as the at the CIA,
yeah.
and he may not support the Michael Hayden taking over.
Yeah.
I mean, the Speaker of the House speaking out against the president, amazing, just amazing.
Well, have you noticed, though, that a lot of times you think, well, maybe they're coming, you know, they're going to stand up for people, you know, against their party. But they usually give in. Have you noticed that?
When push comes to shove, you're right.
Yeah, I just don't trust them.
No, and Hastert will fall in line, too. But I was,
probably.
You know. They go behind closed doors and have these meetings. And when he comes out, he'll say something political. Well, you know, I've had it explained to me now, and I understand better than I did. And you know, when in fact he's been threatened with his job, that's what it is. Oh yeah.
Okay. Well,
thanks for your call,
Juanita.
Bye
bye.
Bye bye. Oh yeah. I don't know. Hey, it's time. Boy, it's way past time. Just been talking and talking and talking here, and didn't realize. Let's take a break here, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
And I hope that he heard me when I called from far behind him. I miss him every day that he was gone. But now I cry alone. I put on my bravest face and watched him off to war. My lover will be gone.
Ah, yes. Welcome back to the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us. I'm in a little better mood than I was when I started the program, but not much. Not much. Look out. Hey, 866-546-5254. If you are in Washington, D.C., you can call our Washington Bureau, 202-370-6153. And if you are in the Phoenix area, you can call the Phoenix Bureau at 623-444-5252. All of those numbers are toll-free, by the way. So we'll be glad to have you give us a call. Ran across a great quote. You know how I am about quotes. This one is important. The liberty of a democracy is not safe if the people tolerate the growth of private power to a point where it becomes stronger than their democratic state itself. That, in essence, is fascism. Ownership of government by an individual, by a group, or any controlling power. Ring a bell? It ought to. Hey, let's go to the phone. Who do we have here?
Hi, Guy. This is Greg from Connecticut.
Hi, Greg.
Hi. Well, you were in such a gloomy mood before, I thought I would call with a few positive things to, you know, lift your mood up a little bit.
We can use them.
Well, I thought I'd start with a short Bush joke, if you're interested.
I love Bush jokes.
Okay, well, probably some, a lot of, you've probably heard this, some of your audience probably has, but I'm sure some of your audience hasn't. Well, by a tragic accident, Bush was killed by a member of the, disgruntled member of the NRA. So he goes up to heaven, and he goes to meet St. Peter, and St. Peter says, well, you know, you just don't have a good enough record to come in, and I know you've tried to buy your way in, but you're going to have to spend one day in heaven and one day in hell and decide which one you want best. Bush says, well, I want to go to heaven. Of course, he says, no, no, rules are rules. You're going to have to go to, for a day to hell. So he goes down to hell, and there they have this beautiful country club, and it's about 80 degrees, great weather, and they're barbecuing, and he sees all his friends there, and, you know, he thinks, well, this isn't that bad at all.
The barbecue would be a natural thing, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So then he goes up to heaven, you know, and there, you know, everybody's poor, and they have that peacenik Jesus who, you know, is doing to, unto others, and, you know, everybody's honest and ethical and telling the truth all the time. And so Bush doesn't like that much at all. So he tells, St. Peter comes to him and says, well, what's your choice? You want to go in heaven or hell? He says, well, you know, to be frank, I kind of like being down in hell with all my friends. It was so nice and warm, and they had great barbecues and everything else. So he says, okay, fine. So he takes the elevator down to hell, but when he gets there, it's like a smoldering, burning inferno, and people are being whipped with chains, and it's just terrible. So he goes up to the devil and says, well, what's the deal? I was just here yesterday, and you had barbecue and great weather and everything, and what's happening here today? He says, the devil says, well, you know, yesterday we were just campaigning. Today you voted for us.
Very good. Very good.
So I thought that would be good.
Yes, indeed.
But anyway, a little bit of good news. I don't know if you've been checking lately, but it looks like Cruella Harris is going to run unopposed against Nelson, which is it's good news, you know, because that campaign has been a train wreck from the get-go.
No kidding.
Yeah, I mean, it's because, like, what was his name? Bence, or whatever that guy was.
Yeah.
Before Saints. He said after much prayer, he's decided he's not going to do it. So, you know, knock wood, there's still time till Friday, but we're hoping that Cruella's going to go against Nelson all by herself, you know, because that campaign has just been a living disaster every
year. Well, yeah. Did you see, her campaign manager up until recently.
I can't remember.
Oh, my God. I tell you what, my brain is just going so bad on me. Anyway, he was the campaign manager for our little third party candidate we had back in the 90s from Texas. You know, what was his name? I got $4 million.
It sounds familiar, but I don't remember.
$4 billion, rather, it was. Oh, well. Someone will call and remind us. I'm having one of those brain problems today of some kind. Yeah, anyway, her former campaign manager last night, he was just talking about how her campaign had just been a complete train wreck, and it has. The papers down here have just been full of all sorts. Obviously, she's a very paranoid person.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
She thinks the whole world's out to get her, and you know what? The Republicans are out to get her. That's
well,
the funny thing.
The good thing about that is if they push her too hard, maybe she'll tell a few little details about the 2000 election. You know, she's that's the Trump card she holds.
That's the key to this whole thing. Ross Perot who I was trying to think of in his camp, the Republican that left the Republican ranks and went over and managed his campaign and quit, and then he took over Cruella's campaign here recently. He was on I believe Tweety Bird last night. But I think you've hit it right there. I think she's got a bag full of secrets about that campaign that they just don't dare cross her, and anything they've said about her has been pretty gentle.
Oh, yeah.
Jebby said the other day that he didn't think she could win. He didn't say anything really nasty. He just said, "No, I don't think she can win." But they've treated her with kid gloves, and you know they'd love to throw her out of there and get somebody else in.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, because they all have all these wonderful secrets. I'm just waiting for the day for this Duke Cunningham scandal to unroll further, you know, because, you know, now there's talk about that there were possibly male prostitutes involved and this and that. You know, these great moral Republicans who are so much better than you or me, you know.
Oh, well, they're much better. You know, and speaking of that, our local newspapers down here, the Naples paper, of course, Porter Goss being a local guy here, you know, they came out right away, and I'm probably going to look like a fool for saying this. This could be one of those things where you could be made to look like a real simpleton. But the newspapers came out, the Naples Daily News came out and said, well, the reason Goss is, he's going to come and he's going to run against Cruella, and and he's going to beat Nelson, and that's what's going to happen. Porter Goss getting out of that whole deal in order to become United States Senator and help the Republicans keep the Senate. I'm willing to go on record to say when donkeys fly. I still believe, and I don't know whether he can sue me or what. I don't know. Good luck if he does. I still think that there's something pretty nasty flying over several of those CIA guys' heads in this whole deal and this what do they call it? Hookergate?
Hookergate, yeah. Well, you know, because a lot of sources now are saying that good old Goss Hogg had about 2 hours' notice before he resigned from his post. It doesn't sound like someone who wants to spend more time with his family, you know.
Right. And old Denny Hastert, who happens to be a close friend of Goss's, is not real happy about the situation, and no one has explained what happened. And then when you throw Negroponte into the mix... I don't know if a lot of people understand just what they're dealing with here with John Dimitri Negroponte. You throw him into the mix there, and you just don't know what this is. It might be a power grab. It might truly be with Fogo. Is that his name, the third in command? There might be some real sleaze all over these people, and I Boy, I don't know.
Yeah, let's just hope that the people realize it by November, you know? I mean, because, you know, yeah, you got to draw people a picture, I guess, for them to see just how bad things are getting.
You know? Do you agree that we've got a sleaze overload right now, and that a lot of it's just sliding right off, and the public is going, oh, well, I'm not even listening anymore?
I think the public is so desensitized anymore. Like I've told you before, like I have this whole group of Democrats who I talk to, and I tell them things, they'll say, oh, that's so horrible, but, you know, God forbid they ever call their congressperson or whatever, you know. So I think in their minds this is, you know, along the lines of Paris Hilton and this and that, you know, and they just don't want to think about it. They don't realize that it translates into them, you know, losing jobs, us being in continuous war and that type of thing. You know, it's not, you know, a Hollywood scandal. It's about real corruption and inability to govern.
Well, it's Washington, you know, and they all do it there, and so, and they always have, and so, you know, if a congressman are doing that sort of thing, you folks shouldn't think it's such a bad thing, because they've always done it that way. You know, that's...
Well, you know, and the, you know, there's no comparison, you know, because like you have Tweety Bird and some of those others coming on and say, well, you know, what that Cynthia McKinney did is the same thing as what DeLay did. Well, you know, I think Cynthia McKinney should be fined for what she did. It's inappropriate to hit a police officer.
Yep.
But it doesn't really compare to Mr. DeLay, you know, but in a lot of people's minds, all those Democrats, they have ethics problems too, see?
Oh, yeah, and we got the gentleman down in New Orleans right now. What's his name? Democratic congressman. Is it Dawson?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
He's having an ethics problem. Hey, throw him out. I mean, it's that simple. If he took bribe money, get rid of him. Throw him into prison. I don't care if he's a Democrat. Doesn't matter to me.
Well, that's the difference between Democrats and Republicans. Democrats, they want law. So whoever does something wrong will be punished for it. Republicans, they just say, well, you know, if it's us, then we're going to look the other way. They're not interested in changing anything because they benefit from the system so much.
I have to wonder, you know, I was... I'm extremely interested in this CIA thing right now with Hayden, and it worries me that we're really heading for a terribly militaristic society here, and I don't like the idea of Negroponte being the head of all the intelligence in the country and having this Hayden under his wing, and I just don't think a lot of people in this country have any understanding at all about the background, about the horrible, nefarious background of John Negroponte. I mean, the man is a criminal.
Mr. Death Camp Negroponte?
Yes. Absolutely.
They should have Mr. Negroponte take a little tour through downtown, you know, Honduras. And,
he can't, you know, can he?
You know, and people look at Oliver North and all of these people who before were criminals are suddenly rehabilitated and writing books and going on tours and this and that. You know, it's these same scummy people. It's like, you know, you'd think in a real country that, you know, they'd be punished and sent to jail and never come back again.
But, oh, yeah. When I saw that Bush had hired, you know, Negroponte, I like, oh, come on now. They wouldn't do that. And, you know, they're awfully proud of it.
Well, they're proud of Bolton. I mean, he couldn't get through the Congress, so let's just put him in as a recess appointment. Bolton is a disgrace, you know, for our country to the whole world.
Oh, and, you know, you go right down the list, Richard Pearl and Otto Reich and all these people that are in the Bush administration, just one criminal right after another, and no one seems to... No one seems to care. I don't know. Well,
like I say, if we don't do something about it in November, we deserve whatever we get as a country. So, you know, people better wake up because we're not going to have too many of these elections where we have a chance anymore.
That's exactly right. Couldn't agree more.
Well, thanks a lot, Kai, as usual.
Hey, thanks for a great call.
And cheer up.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Well, let's go over to line one here. Who do we have on the line?
Hi, guys. This is John calling you from Virginia Beach.
Hi, John.
I was wanting to call you about this health insurance bill here. These Republicans are trying to pass that would have insurance companies not cover people for cancer and chronic illnesses, and they say, well, that's going to let more people buy insurance because they'll lower the rates because they don't have to cover that. But you know, what good is insurance if it doesn't cover you?
Yeah, you know, what they want to do is they want to make it high risk insurance for anybody who has any medical problems, and they'll gladly insure at a decent rate anybody whom they think never has had any medical problems or ever will. I mean, that's
yeah,
you know.
But it's just it's, breast exam or whatever for cancer there. And what good is even having insurance then? It's just disgusting.
Exactly. Exactly. I couldn't agree more. This whole thing is it's tailor-made for the insurance companies, for the HMOs. It's tailor-made to make them a fortune. That's just plain and simple all there is to it, and there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, we're the only westernized country without national health care, and I don't know when Americans are going to wake up, and I guess it's because many of them don't know what these other countries have. You ask, I work with people from Australia and things, and you ask them which health care system is better, they laugh at you. They tell you Americans don't have a health care system.
Oh, you better believe it. And where I live here, we get a lot of Canadians that come down for the winter, and they're only allowed to be gone out of their country for a certain amount of time, or their insurance becomes inactive. And man, oh man, when that time comes that they got to get back home to Canada, they're out of here because they like their insurance that they have up there, their nationalized insurance. They like it. Now, I don't care what the American government says about it, and what you hear the right-wingers say, the Canadian people, as a people, are extremely satisfied with their health care system.
Well, I've never heard a foreigner who said he didn't like it, except maybe one of those rich British guy on Fox News or whatever that does the Neil Cavuto show. That's the only one I've ever heard that said he didn't like it. But,
yeah.
I don't know. It almost seems like you would think these guys are just trying to destroy the country slowly. You know, the way got Bush raising the debt ceiling again. I guess they wanted to raise it by another trillion. Said they forgot to add a trillion on it last time. And it's just, you know, it's like a slow downfall. They're strangling us.
Very, very much so. And, you know, like I mentioned that quote about FDR a few minutes ago, a smaller and smaller group of people is controlling this country. And that's, by any definition, that's fascism. And we've got to get up on our hind legs here and fight like hell to keep that from happening here. I spoke to some wonderful German people over the weekend whose parents were involved in the Second World War on the German side. And they had some very interesting things to say to me regarding of their parents, the remorse that their parents felt after the war was over, of how they got sucked in to Hitler's propaganda and thought they were doing the right thing because the government was telling them this and the government was telling them that. And, you know, they gladly went out and put on the uniform and flew the swastika and joined the army. And he said their parents were so ashamed till the day they died that they had gotten snookered by a man like Adolf Hitler with propaganda. And he said, and we see this happening in your country now, not to the extent it was happening in Hitler's Germany, but we see the beginnings of it, and you folks need to beware. And I was taken aback by that when these people said this to me. I really was. God, that's a...
Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, I've talked to foreigners, too, and every time when they talk about stuff the U.S. is doing, you don't know. It's just so tough because, you know, Bush is supposed to represent the U.S. as a whole, and you know there was back then about half the people not supporting him, you know, in the election also, and these people just, they can't understand why, what's going on, why Americans can't see.
Oh yeah, it's no longer the story that we don't like your government, but we love the American people. Now it's hey, wait a minute, you guys reelected this man.
Yeah.
What's wrong with America? I'm starting to hear that a lot, and man, it hurts. It hurts, yeah. when we've you know, I was growing up during a time when America could do no wrong, and you know, and now to hear this from other countries, people from other countries, it hurts, and we've got to get back to where we were and restore our respect and our dignity with our fellow human beings on this planet. Hey, thank you so much for your call.
All right, thanks, Dad.
Really appreciate hearing from you. Great call.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, we're coming up to the top of the hour. We're going to have news at the top of the hour. It does hurt. I'm not kidding when I say that. I sat and listened to these folks, and we had a nice discussion. Them telling about how their folks, both of them, mother and father, got sucked into being part of Hitler's Hitler's army, and you know how the whole country just went mad for Hitler and all that. And I listened with fascination to the story, and then to have the gentleman look at me and say, you know, there's some of this happening in your country right now. And I just, you know, that's a slap in the face. That's just like, whoa, wait a minute. And you think about it, and he's right. Hey, we're going to pause for the news at the top of the hour. Don't you go anywhere. We'll be back in just a few. Do want to remind you, you're listening to The Guy James Show. And we're going to be back right after the news.
This is the Quality News Network. Iran's president says his country will not back down on its nuclear program and accuses Western powers of monopolizing the nuclear technology market. His comments came during a trip to Indonesia, where he is expected to sign a deal to jointly develop an oil refinery on the island of Java. Iraq's president says more than 1,000 Iraqis have been killed in war-related violence this year, and he's calling for an end to those killings. Today, at least 24 Iraqis were killed, while the death toll from yesterday's attacks has risen to 24. Iraq's president also says more than 1,000 Iraqis died in sectarian clashes last month in Baghdad alone. At least 3,525 Iraqis have been killed in war-related violence this year. Also in Iraq, a dispute over who should head the powerful oil ministry has put the formation of a new government on hold. Parliament met today for only its second session since December's elections. Five suspected insurgents escaped from a U.S. military prison in Baghdad early yesterday morning. An official said there is still no sign of the men, and an investigation is ongoing. In Israel, the company that provides fuel to the Palestinian area cut off supply. Today, the Palestinians reportedly owe $26 million to the company. Gas supplies are expected to run out by tomorrow, prompting fears of a humanitarian crisis. At the United Nations, powers have been temporary. Officials say funding from the international community is the only way to prevent a collapse into anarchy. In Russia, President Vladimir Putin delivered a State of the Nation speech today in which he expressed concern over the country's declining birth rate. Putin encouraged women to have more babies and called for a stronger army to both guard against potential attack and resist political pressure from abroad. In Italy, an 80-year-old former communist was elected president today. The incoming prime minister says he'll swear in his new government next week. In Washington, the Senate has reached a tentative agreement on sanctions against employers who hire illegal immigrants. Senate Republicans and Democrats hope to reach a compromise on the bill this week so they can vote on it before Memorial Day. In Chicago, a dozen schoolboys between the ages of 6 and 8 could be charged in the alleged sexual assault of a female classmate. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
House Republicans are expected to vote today on a tax package. The $70 billion measure extends the reduced capital gains and dividends tax rate for two more years. The bill could reach President Bush's desk by the end of the week. The Federal Reserve expected to raise key interest rates to 5% when policymakers meet today. Some small lenders are now offering homebuyers 50-year adjustable rate loans. They're targeted at those who need to keep their monthly payments low in face of record-high home prices and rising interest rates. Gulf Coast homeowners have filed a lawsuit against State Farm Insurance. Nearly 700 residents accused the company of using a one-size-fits-all report as the basis for refusing to cover damage to homes in the wake of Hurricane Katrina. Ford is lowering its global market share projections for 2006, announcing 7 North American plants will close between 2010 and 2012. In Japan, U.S. beverage giant Coca-Cola expanding a recall to include 2.37 million bottles of 27 different soft drinks laced with small amounts of iron powder. 570,000 bottles were pulled last month for the same reason the recall applies only in Japan. Light sweet crude, currently $71 a barrel. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow down 4, NASDAQ down 13 points, S&P 500 down 3. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Yes, we are back with you. And for some reason, we've got quite a lot of you with us this afternoon. And I do hope you'll give us a call and take part in the program. 866-546-5254. This is an audience participation program, in case you haven't figured that out. 866-546-5254. If you're in the Washington, D.C. area, 202-370-6153, toll-free. And if you're in the Phoenix area, call our Phoenix Bureau, 623-444-5252. Speaking of audience participation, I'm getting more comfortable here, as many of you know. I run the show by myself. I don't have an engineer or a producer in the studio. Really, it's out of necessity. Those things cost money, and we are a low-budget program. Listener-supported, by the way, to all of you new folks listening. And so oftentimes, I don't get a chance to go to the chat rooms during the show. I'm kind of busy doing this, that, and the other thing. But during the news, I went over to check my email. And I got an interesting email from someone that I want to share this with you, okay? And it's not real short, but it's not real long either. And the person who sent it to me, I'll keep his name quiet, but I appreciate getting an email like this, and this echoes what I hear day in and day out, and I know it echoes what you hear, so many of you hear day in and day out, about this wonderful economy we have in this country and how great it is. Hello, Guy. Been a listener for a while now and figured that I'd write in. You said you're having a rotten day. It's very mutual. This isn't a very short email, but I'll try and keep it as concise as possible. I'm a 20-year-old college student who's been working since I was 16. I have superb recommendations from my former employees and employers and an excellent work ethic and academic record. Last fall, my hours got cut, and I've spent the last 6 months applying for job after job like mad. I've gotten a total of one callback and interview. All the rest have gone completely ignored, upwards of 50 applications. My hours again got cut last month down to 16 a week, and I have a 45-minute commute to work. Think of that, folks, with $3 a gallon gas with only 16 hours a week. I'll go on with the email. There's almost no point in even holding this job anymore, but I cannot seem to find a new one. I had an interview today. I drove 30 minutes up to the office only to be told they had no positions to put me in and they couldn't help me. It pissed me off because on Monday they called me after receiving my resume and saying they were shorthanded and can use my experience. I have 2 years of security experience. With the loss in pay lately, I had to move back in with my parents, who are rabid right-wing hacks who pray to God aloud every day to give strength to our blessed leader. They're referring to W. Of course, to make things worse, I'm gay, so the home life is just plain hell. Thankfully, they don't know I actually have had a boyfriend in Chicago for some time now, or you better believe I'd be in deep doo-doo. I edited that just a little bit. My situation may be a bit of an extreme example, but the feeling is not. Young people today have so little hope. We get accused of not being politically active enough. I don't think that's really true. Most peers I talk to are well-informed, but there is just absolutely no sense of hope. Jesus, this is making me feel bad. Truly feel bad. He goes on to say they're too busy trying to hold what little bits of a life they have together in this sinking economy. I'm sad to say I've become one of them. I've contacted my political representatives and have informed people as best I can, even making a few converts. I can't help feeling that none of it matters, though. What good has any of it done? I'm just filled with overwhelming dread of going on like this. Perhaps I'm just in a black hole of hope because of the family, but I'm not so sure. Well, he goes on to say they're even exploring a move to Canada. By the time I'm done with college, I'd be in debt beyond belief, and even with a degree, I'll likely end up flipping burgers. What's the point anymore? I apologize for the tone and length of the letter. Just needed to vent some. Tim from the economic paradise of Michigan. Man. Well, Tim, I thank you for that. It's the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. That's the real America out there right now. That's the real America. That's not the America you see them talking about on the economic news on CNBC. That's not the America you hear Bush get up and talk about how this economy is booming. That's not the America you see all the Republican candidates out swearing that this is the greatest economy they've had in I don't know when. No. What Tim just described is the real America. This is the real America. This is the one that's really out there right now. Good jobs, hard to find. Bush's job creation, the lowest in 40 years by far. The Bureau of Labor Statistics reported establishment job creation of 138,000 jobs. The consensus estimate was around 200,000. Despite the right-wing noise machine's protestations to the contrary, Bush's record of job creations is still the lowest of the last 40 years by far. Now, I could go on and bore you with some numbers here, but these are government numbers. These are people that come from, these are numbers that come from Bush's own administration. And I'm telling you, this is the real America. I had this talk with a friend of mine earlier this week saying, well, you know, things are really good for me. Well, that's good, and I am really glad for you that things are good for you. But for every one of you that I talk to, and believe me, I swear to God, I am glad for you. You know I am. I say that to you. I'm talking to someone I know very well. For every one of you, I talk to 10 people that tell me it's exactly the opposite for them. Home foreclosures are at a record high. And I was told, well, sir, they are. Because so many people went out and bought a home for the first time because the banks were giving 100% loans, 110% loans to people, and gave loans to people that they shouldn't have given loans to, people who couldn't afford the homes, and so now they're having to repossess them. Whose fault is that? Whose fault is that? Let me say here and now, of course, many of these people should not have gotten themselves in a position to buy a home on a 100 or 110% loan where they could not pay the thing back, especially if they got one of those goddamn ARM loans with no cap on the interest. That was begging to get beaten to death by the banks. But whose fault is this? Is it the poor banks? Should we feel sorry for the lending institutions that are having record foreclosures right now? I don't think so. Why are they having record foreclosures? Because of pure, unadulterated greed. There's no other way to put it. The people that bought these homes and are having them taken back from them right now didn't buy these homes because of unadulterated greed. Most of them bought these homes because they needed a home. And it was the first time, the first way that they could find a way, that they can afford a way to get a home. And now they're losing their homes, some of them, because they've lost their jobs. They've had their pay cut. They've lost their insurance. They have families and they have to pay insurance, high insurance bills. Or they have insurance maybe like lots of us do that isn't worth a damn anyway, and your copay is so high that you may as well not even have it. Or you've got a child that's extremely sick and you've got one of these deductibles that's sky high. And you've gone out and you've bought a home. And all of a sudden you find yourself in a position through health problems or job problems where you've lost your home and it's been foreclosed upon. And then someone tells you, well, you know, these people went over and spent beyond their means. Maybe they did. But they were enticed to do so by these banks. Did you notice all the ads on TV over the past year until the interest rates started rising higher and higher where they are now? Come on in, refi with us. Come on and get an interest-only loan. Come in and get a 110% loan. Hell, we'll give it to you. All you got to do is pay us interest. Some of them even say, don't pay us anything. And people flocked in, people that never owned a home. First-time home buyers went in about this. Who is responsible for that ultimately? Who is responsible? The villain in this deal is not the people that bought those homes. The villain is the lending institution with their unadulterated greed. I'm sorry, I have no empathy whatsoever for a lending institution that has to foreclose upon a house and loses their ass on it. I do not care one bit. They deserve it. They deserve it because of greed. And don't think for a minute they haven't made it back a hundredfold on the other loans that they've got on their books. I am sick to death of hearing about this great economy that we've got. And to all of you who are prospering right now, congratulations. And I mean that. I am happy for you. I sincerely am. But I want you to know, for every one of you that are prospering right now, there are 10 that are not. There are, for every one of you that's got the new car in the garage and can afford it and the fancy house and anything you want, all the toys and everything that you want, you can afford, and you can go to sleep at night and not worry about paying your bills. For every one of you that can do that, there are 10 who lay awake at night wondering how they're going to pay their bills because they're losing their job. They've had their hours cut, their benefits cut. In this great economy of George W. Bush's, this great Republican economy. I'm sick of hearing this. I don't know how anybody can tolerate hearing this day after day. I have to turn it off when I see it. Who's this ass on TV? This Larry Kudlow on TV. I watched 5 minutes of him the other night just going on and on and on about what a great economy we got. The stock market is at a 5-year high or whatever it is. It's going to pass 12,000. Oh, well, whoop-dee-doo. Mr. Kudlow, the top 1% of the people in this country own 49% of the value of every share of stock in this nation. The top 1%. So that stock market can literally go right through the roof, and the economy can go right down the drain. I said I was in a bad mood today, and I am. Wow. I have a dear friend that's suffering through this. And it's terrible. It's terrible when there's nothing you can do about it. And you see them lose their home. And wonder what they're going to do. I don't know. I don't know what to say. Sometimes it's just plain overwhelming. It really is. I think right now, better just take a break and maybe get composed.
President stood in front of the jet planes. The rubble's all settled and democracy reigns. We defeated their army, taken control, dropped thousands of bombs, and they've taken their toll. The oil's on fire, just like the blood of a billion Muslims dragged through the mud. And the world is safer with the dictator gone, and their lot will improve with our corporate pawn. The war is over. That's what he said, go back to your business. We've buried the dead and the war is over. Fatherless children have taken the street. All that remains is the sting of defeat. Homes are in ruins, cancer is rife. For soldiers and newborns, the end of a life. Kids grown up with just hunger and fear. But lo, behold, the Yankees are here. Now all you people are gonna be free. Cause this land was made for Chevron and me. And the war is over. That's what he said, just turn on your TV. We've buried the dead and the war is over. The government files are all up in flames. His victims of torture, who remembers their names? The past doesn't matter, but the future is bright as the Exxon refinery lights up the night. History's looted like the library's shelves, but we'll fill them with Bibles, be proud of ourselves. Turn your schools into compounds, make room for us all. If you're missing your legs, you can learn how to crawl. The war is over. That's what he said, forget it all happened. buried the dead and the war is over. And the price was worth it, yeah, we'd do it again. With bombs or with sanctions, kids, women, and men. Cause we have national interests and they must be met. We will enforce them by treaty or jet. And when time has passed and we've had some rest, we'll find a new villain, cause that's what we do best. Maybe a sultan or a grandson of Mao, but don't trouble your conscience, because as of now, the war is over. That's what he said, just put it behind you. We've buried the dead and the war is over.
The war is over. Sure it is. Not going to be over for a long time. A long, long time in this country. As long as Mr. Bush is in power, we will be at war with somebody. Maybe more than one. Well, we've got two wars going right now, both of them going extremely badly. I guess, what the hell? A third one with Iran, so what, huh? Sure. That's what the hawks are talking about. That's what the hawks want. Let's go get Iran. Yes, sir. Let's go get them. Can you imagine? Can you imagine there are actually people who purport to be level-headed people in this country recommending that we go to war against Iran? I tell ya, if I were king of the world, and they better not ever make me king of the world, but if I were, anybody that suggested that, it'd have one of those little white straitjackets on, be put in one of those padded rooms, and they'd have to stay there for a while and get heavily medicated, because there's something to hell wrong with somebody that would suggest a thing like that. Oh, yeah. Hey, I don't apologize for going off on a rant about having a bad economy and friends getting hurt over it and all. What you see or what you hear. What you hear, I guess, is what you get on this program, and I am human, and I will. My grandfather had a wonderful old man work for him when I was a little kid, and his one of his favorite things. I don't know why it stuck with me. It stuck with me my whole life. Something the old man said. That to me has been most definitely words to live by. And so that's the reason what you hear is what you get on this program. The old man said, be what you is. Even if you is old and ugly, be what you is. And I'll always be what I is. And you can always count on that on this program. So if I get a little upset now and then, you'll understand why. Maybe I am half crazy to go along with that. Hey, we've got a friend over at Slate Magazine. I know a lot of you read Slate Magazine, and I'm going to give you a homework assignment. I wish you would go over to slatemagazine.com and read the latest article by John Dickerson. John, whose mother was a great columnist and reporter. He's currently writing a book about his mother, just about ready to finish it. I had a conversation with him yesterday. Anyway, I wrote him about this article, and I challenged him on his ideas, and he did. He wrote an article on Monday last that it just blew me away. And his take on the upcoming election is not at all based on any kind of reality that I'm familiar with. And so I wrote and I told him so, and I invited him on the show to debate me on the subject, and I think that's going to happen very soon, maybe in the next day or so. We had a nice discussion on email, and I didn't say that to him, not being based on reality with any kind of rancor. I wouldn't do that. He's a good man. He thinks that Nancy Pelosi made a huge mistake by telling the Sunday morning TV viewers that the Democrats might do some investigating of the Bush administration if they take back control of the House or the Senate. And in his article, John tries to equate the situation to when the Republicans lost a lot of ground because of aggressively pursuing Clinton for so long that the public was weary of it and voted for the Dems or just stayed home. And he thinks the Democrats should just clam up and not mention any of the Bush administration scandals and go through the election that way. The big problem with John's argument is that the public was indeed tired of seeing the Republicans go after Clinton for so long. They were tired of it because it was just plain silly, and it was vindictive of the Republicans to crucify that guy over a sexual dalliance in the side office of the Oval Office. I think half of them were just jealous. See, John, no one was hurt in that situation except for Clinton and Monica and Hillary and Chelsea. The fact is that Clinton probably enjoyed himself. He got what he wanted. Monica obviously got what she wanted, too, and everybody should have been happy. Happy and silent. But Linda Tripp, Lucy Ann Goldberg, and the lovely Ann Coulter just had to get in there and have a sniff of that famous blue dress that Monica so lovingly saved. She saved it, in my opinion, not as evidence for an investigation, but rather she saved it kind of like a high school girl saves a corsage and presses the flowers between the pages of a big book. You remember how girls used to do that? Do girls still do that? Well, I think that's why she saved that blue dress without getting it dry cleaned. I really do. You probably think I'm weird for saying that. But anyway, that's what I think. So the whole thing, if you'll pardon the expression, blows over eventually. And the voters took vengeance on the Republicans because of their being overzealous concerning this sexual peccadillo by two consenting adults. It was, again, pardon the expression, overblown. Does John actually think the voters, as dense as they may be sometime, would actually equate the Monica Lewinsky affair with the terrible scandals of the Bush administration, the phony Iraq war, lying about WMDs, outing a covert CIA agent for revenge, the Scooter Libby, Karl Rove, Tom DeLay, Duke Cunningham, illegal spying on American citizens, what else? Misleading the public about a connection between Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden, and the list goes on and on and on. John, don't you think the public wants to know the answers to these questions? Don't you think the public is entitled to know whether or not the President and Vice President of the United States of America are criminals? You see, that's not a hard word to say. The President and the Vice President of the United States may well be criminals. Not just politicians run amok. Criminals. Don't you think the public has a right to know if Karl Rove and Scooter Libby broke the law concerning our national security over the Valerie Plame matter? John, it's apples and oranges, the difference between the Lewinsky affair that the public was so tired of and finally saw through and what we're facing now. So to say that Democrats shouldn't go after the Republicans on these and other matters is, to me, terribly naive. He quotes Democratic strategist Joe Lockhart. And I spoke to, when's the last time Joe Lockhart won an election for someone? Well, you know, Joe Lockhart's a great guy. I met him in Washington. He is. He's a great guy. A lovable guy. He really is. But will someone please explain to me why Joe and who else? Donna Brazile. Why are they asked on the TV talk shows to represent the views of Democrats when neither of them seems to have a clue as to what the rank-and-file grassroots Democrats want from their leaders? I love them both, Donna and Joe. But if I want to find out what real Democrats are thinking, they're the last two people I would ask. Please. I'm never invited on those shows, but I'll tell you this. I'm enough of a Democratic strategist to understand that the Democratic voters want some explanations, and they want them now. They want their leaders to demand answers from the Republicans, and knowing full well the answers won't be forthcoming, the Democratic voters will overwhelmingly demand investigations into these serious charges against so many prominent Republicans. This is not a partisan matter anymore. This is an American problem, and I can tell you that in my experience with concerned Democrats, they don't give two hoots in hell what party these guys are in. They want an answer as to how we ended up in this war. They want an answer as to why a covert CIA agent was outed. They want an answer as to why the President of the United States felt that he could bypass the law 750 times because he thought the laws to be unconstitutional. Because he thought the laws were unconstitutional. Democrats are patriots, and any good patriot worth his salt wants answers to these questions. John, you're wrong as wrong can be on this. Maybe you should come on outside the Beltway for a while and see what's going on out here in America. I assure you, it's not the same as inside the Beltway. The difference between no two world, the difference between pitch black darkness and the mid-afternoon sunlight. Come on the show, John, and debate this issue. We'll treat you with respect and admiration for all the times that you've been right, and you've been right plenty of times. But we respectfully disagree with you on this issue, and I'd like for you to come on the show and explain yourself. Regular outside the Beltway Democrats would like to hear what you have to say. And I would look for John to come on the program as soon as he can. He said he would. So we'll let him come on and defend himself. He's a great guy, a great writer, by the way. I guess everybody's entitled to be wrong once in a while, huh? But he claims he's not on this issue. I can tell you this. Does anybody share my opinion? Am I the crazy one here? I go out and I speak to groups of Democrats around Florida. And sometimes they're big groups, sometimes they're small groups. And I can tell you, and I don't know why Florida would be any different, I can tell you that the Democrats that I talk to want answers. They want answers, and they want their Democratic legislators that they elect to demand the answers to the questions that I've brought up here. That is what they want. So, in my opinion, if these so-called Democratic strategists are hell-bent upon guiding Democrats running for office against demanding answers and want them just to stay away from that situation, don't even talk about it. Oh, no, we won't. We'll just govern when we get in there, and we won't investigate. We'll be really nice. When we get in there, you know, those nasty old Republicans, they always investigate the Democrats and everything, but when we get in, we won't do it. We'll be nice. And we'll just let bygones be bygones. And that way, everybody will just be happy, and we'll all get along, and everything will be nice. Oh, yeah. Let me tell you, and I'll bet you my listeners, 99% of them agree with what I'm saying right now. I'll bet you they do. I'll bet you they do. I hope you'll go on the website and say so, or the chat room, or send me an email and say so if you disagree. But I can tell you that every place I go speak and talk about this issue, There isn't a head in the room that isn't nodding to that issue. Believe me when I tell you, the Democratic voters are not wanting their candidates to ignore this issue. And I'm not kidding. I'm really not. Hey, let's just take a little break here and I told you I was in a mean mood today. I warned you ahead of time. You didn't have to stick around and listen. I told you. I warned you. And I'm asking you once again, if you disagree with me on that, please send me an email or post it on Democratic Underground or Democrats.com. I'd like to know. Because if I'm whistling Dixie here, I'd like to know it. But I'll tell you what, in my personal experience of being out and about and talking to Democrats everywhere, and I talk to them whenever I can, I find no indication that the Democrats want our candidates to just let this issue go? None. So I'm a Democratic strategist too, so there. Hey, we're going to pause for a break. By the way, 866-546-5254. You've got about 20 minutes left to call in the program and vent and let us know about your views. Call me a dumbass for saying what I just said or anything I've said. Here's your chance. 866-546-5254. I'd love to hear from you. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Take the side of freedom, know your enemy. It ain't hard to do, they speak on our TV. They own the radio, they own the magazine. As they make the world sick with their disease. Well, they're selling promises to the working man. Who's signing contracts that you don't understand. They got them tied down, working overtime. Hoping that the ends will meet somewhere down the line. Somewhere down the line, we're gonna have to make a stand. Our drain's gonna wash away the blood upon the land. Where the tears are falling down, raging seal flow. Singing the most perfect song the world has ever known. Still arresting anyone who's making noise. Enjoy your freedom, but just don't raise your voice. Live your life in silence, work till you're 65. Always chasing dreams that you will never realize. You're working for the dollar that they'll just take away. And line their pockets with the money that you save. As the market crumbles, they're still getting fat. Go watch a movie and forget about that. Somewhere down the line, we're gonna have to make a stand. Our brain's gonna wash away the blood upon the land. Where the tears are falling down, raging seal flow. Singing the most perfect song the world did ever know. Singing the most perfect song the world did ever know.
It's been 5 years since I've had a raise in pay. Way things are going, I could get laid off any day. Sure is hard living with all this pain. I know what I need. I need somebody to blame. Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
It's all their fault.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
They got some balls.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
They got no class.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
Let's send them back.
My neighborhood library is about to close. The school my kids go to is becoming a joke. Self-serving liberals blame it on corporate tax breaks. But that's propaganda. I know who I should hate. Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
It's all their fault.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
They got some balls.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
They got no class.
teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
Let's send them back.
Who's to blame for the potholes and flooding and drought?
It's all their fault. It's all their fault.
Who's to blame for inflation, unemployment, and everything I'm pissed off about? Who's to blame for the end of the good old days? Who's to blame for the fact that I can't get laid? Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
It's all their fault.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
They got some gold.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
They got no class.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
Let's send them back. Send them back. Send them back.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
It's all their fault.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
They got some gold.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers.
It is. It's all their fault. Just ask the Bush administration. Read the newspapers and Wall Street Journal. You'll find out that song is just exactly accurate. Yeah, that's right. And that's what they'll tell you every single day. You know, I have to wonder, and I was thinking to myself the other day, I let my mind wander off sometimes. I sit here high atop the Truth and Broadcasting studio and look out the window at the beautiful palm trees and all that, and my mind wanders far away, and sometimes it wanders away to Washington, D.C. And I talk to people in Washington just about every day, somebody at one of the organizations there. And I love the town. I do. Oh, I do. I love Washington. Not for some of the things that happens there, but I just, you know, the sense of history you have when you walk around that town. It's an overwhelming feeling. And, you know, it's a neat town, too. You go down to Georgetown, maybe down to DuPont Circle or Embassy Row or any of the places down through there. It's pretty cool. It is. I love it. I do. It's kind of a shame that a lot of the kids from now on, and for quite some time now, won't be able to really see the Capitol building like you used to. Gosh, when I was a kid. I say that a lot, don't I, when I was a kid. Even when I was not so much of a kid, even when I was in high school, you could, you could just take off and walk around the Capitol building, go any place you wanted to. You could go up and take the elevator and go up and, you know, go down to your representative's office in the Capitol building, and I mean, you could just wander around the place at will, and you can't do that anymore. In fact, you can't even on a regular tour anymore go into the rotunda, and isn't that a rotten shame? When you stand there in that rotunda, as I've done many times, and many of you have, you think about Kennedy's coffin and Lincoln's coffin and some of the great American coffins that have been there under the dome and the rotunda, and the people filing past, and the great history of the funerals in Washington, D.C., and the great events in D.C., and the many great, great inaugural speeches. You think of, for my mind, the one that'll, you know, is always the one to beat is Ask Not. You know, that was heady stuff. That was heady stuff. And so I do. I love that town. Pardon me. Bad radio thing to do. Cough on the air. Anyway, I knew you wouldn't mind. What I would like to know, and I'm trying to find out in the Bush administration, I have good connections from the Clinton administration. I have a family member who was had a very prestigious job in the Clinton administration for 8 years, and we were also very, very proud of her. But I don't have any contacts inside this Republican administration. Some other Republican administrations, yes, but not this one. This one's different. But if any of you know, if any of you know anybody that's on the inside to be willing to talk a little bit, what I want to know is, does Karl Rove or, I don't know, some of the White House staff, when they put this Bush administration together, when they got the cabinet members together, for example, for the first cabinet meeting, and everybody in the higher offices, did they call them all in the big meeting room in the West Wing there someplace and say, now look, here's the deal. Here's the deal. Whatever you do, whatever you say, whenever you're faced with the public on TV, on radio, in public, speaking, whatever, don't ever tell the truth, no matter what. Everybody raise your right hand right now and swear a Republican oath to the Bush administration that when confronted with any question whatsoever, you will never, on your honor, swear to God, you will never tell the truth. Is that what happened in this administration? You know, usually you're rather innocuous departments of government. HUD, for example. I mean, you know, that's a department of government that you don't hear a lot about. I mean, it's got a big budget and all that. And it's got a secretary, Alfonso Jackson. And I assume that by now most of you heard about this little flap he's in. It's not a little flap. I think it's a big flap that he's involved in right now. But this is why I brought up the fact that do these people swear an oath never to tell the truth? He gets up and he tells a story the other day. Let me see. Let me find my notes here. According to the Dallas Business Journal, Alfonso Jackson, he's the head of HUD, he closed an April 28th speech with a cautionary tale relaying a conversation he had with a prospective advertising contractor. The contractor, according to Alfonso Jackson, had made a heck of a proposal, so we selected him, Jackson told a group of real estate officials. He came to see me and thanked me for selecting him. Then he said something. He said, I have a problem with your president. Jackson said, I said, what do you mean? He said, I don't like President Bush. And Jackson says, I thought to myself, brother, you have a disconnect. The president is elected. I was selected. You wouldn't be getting the contract unless I was sitting here. If you have a problem with the president, don't tell the secretary. Jackson continued. He didn't get the contract. Why should I reward someone who doesn't like the president? Well, this caused a big uproar in the halls of Congress. And there are people wanting him out of there. Trying to see who it was today that ask for him to resign. Anyway, there are people asking for him to resign over saying this. So what does he do? Instead of coming out and apologizing and say, you know what, I was, you know, that was a stupid thing. Don't even use the word stupid. I misspoke. They like that word. I misspoke, and I should not have said that, and I apologize for saying that. Oh, no. No. He doesn't say that. Jackson claims now that he fabricated the whole story. Last night, Jackson's spokeswoman, Dusty Tucker, responded to the report by claiming the secretary's story was actually, was actually hypothetical, pure fiction. She said, he was merely trying to explain to the audience how people in D.C. will say critical things about the secretary, will unfairly characterize the president, and then turn around and ask you for money. Tucker said he did not actually meet with someone and turn down a contract. He's not part of the contracting process. In other words, the claim is that Jackson fabricated a long and detailed exchange about a CEO who doesn't actually exist and a process he isn't actually involved with. That excuse isn't just difficult to swallow. It also contradicts Tucker's first comments to journalists early yesterday in which she spoke as if the contractor existed, saying he had approached Mr. Jackson, trashing in a very aggressive way him and the president. It appears now that Jackson is changing his story as the criticism builds. Of course, Representative Henry Waxman, Democrat from California, and Barney Frank sent a letter yesterday saying Jackson's remarks were improper and most likely illegal, and Senator Frank Lautenberg called for Jackson's resignation. Moreover, bidding for a government contract isn't asking for money, as Tucker claimed. It's not Alfonso Jackson's money to give away to his buddies. I know the whole damn Bush administration looks at it like it's their money to give away, but it isn't. It is the taxpayers' money, and it should go to whoever can do the best job, regardless of their political views. Now, I'm not naive enough to think that Democrats wouldn't favor Democrats giving up contracts, too. But this story here, and so now he's denied the whole thing. It's just blows my mind that you would think somebody, anybody. Well, you know, I never thought about it this way before, but it just hit me. You know who the most honest person in the Bush administration is? The most honest person in the Bush administration that I can think of? It's Jack Abramoff. He's not actually in the administration, but he's involved with them. Most honest Republican in Washington right now is Jack Abramoff. Why do I say that? Because Jack has admitted some of the things he did wrong. He has admitted doing some things wrong. Therefore, Jack Abramoff, for my money, should get the prize of Honest Republican of the Month. Because he's the only one to admit that he did anything wrong. The only one. Now, if you can think of other leading candidates who have admitted doing wrongdoing as Republicans, please let me know, and we'll put them up for the Honest Republican of the Month next month. But it's our very first Honest Republican of the Month award, and it goes to Jack Abramoff. I'm sorry I didn't have a drum roll for you there. I should have if we wanted to really do it upright. Maybe we will the next time. It's not one of those shows where you get all the little production stuff, you know, that everybody has on their shows. We're not really into that very much on this program. Well, that's a hell of a note, isn't it, when you stop and think of Jack Abramoff as probably the most honest one of them? But imagine this Alfonso Jackson. Now here's what I want to know. Did he walk in the door last? I don't know if he's married or not, but if he is, did he walk into the house last night and his wife looked at him and said, "What the hell is wrong with you? You blab your big mouth and tell everybody that you screwed over that guy and took the contract away from him. You had to open your big fat mouth and tell him that. And then when somebody asks you about it, you come up with the most cockamamie story I ever heard in my life," and she whacks him upside the head with a frying pan. It's got to be a scene like that. Does a man who would do something this stupid deserve to be Secretary of Housing and Urban Development? Really? Can you, honest to God, be that damn dense and stupid and still get a job high up in an administration like this? I guess you can. I guess I answered my own question. I guess you most definitely can. I'm fascinated by that. I really am. You know, I'm bowled over by a lot of things that happen in political life from the Republicans and the Democrats. You know, I'm always fair about it. I am. I was amazed how long Old Jim Traficant got away with what he did. I've told you that story about what he tried to get away with when he was a sheriff of Mahoning County, Ohio, and just flat out conned a jury into thinking, well, anyway, some of these people are amazing liars, and some people are really good at it, but the ones like Alfonso Jackson, Alfonso, man, you better go talk to Karl Rove and some of those boys again, because you're not very good at lying at all. Your lies sound really, really ridiculous. Hey, I'm in a better mood than I was when I started the show. I hope you are, too. We'll try and be in a little better mood tomorrow, if we can. In the meantime, I want to remind you this is a listener-supported show, and we appreciate your help. Go to the old PayPal button or send us a snail mail. The address is on the website. And most of all, I appreciate you listening to the program. I really do. Make me feel just all warm and toasty inside. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. Talk to you tomorrow, gang.